Thank you, and great presentation to follow, because some of the efforts that we had through this process that I'm going to talk about actually resulted in us creating a policy statement for APHA, which we found out last night was formally recommended to the Governing Council, so they'll vote on that today. But so I think this ties in very nicely. No disclosures, this was the group of people that actually worked on this entire process with us. Through this presentation, I'm going to talk a little bit about strategies to get involved in the state policy process, and then also how a group of students under Dr. Stone's direction were able to use service learning to get involved and kind of move some policy forward in the state of Indiana. So as a part of our curriculum in the department, it's a PhD in health policy and management, and in the second year of your curriculum, you take what they call a workshop in health policy and management. Dr. Stone currently teaches this course, and what we do is we identify a policy issue early on and then work with agencies to research the issue and kind of move that forward through the entire policy process. And if successful, we can see some sort of result where that gets adopted at the state level. As a part of that course, we're supposed to work collaboratively with different agencies, demonstrate the ability to think critically about an issue and analyze how that policy fits into the state policy, and then develop an evaluation plan to look at how that affects the state after the fact. So I'm just going to talk about four brief overview type things to be aware of. There's a lot more into the process, but I think these four are overarching and do a good job of illustrating how at what steps you want to get involved and how to move things forward. First, you have to know the legislative process in your state. It varies drastically by state. Research the issue, build relationships with key individuals, and gain support. And I'm going to talk about each of those in the following slides. So in Indiana, the state policy process actually starts in the summer. We have a part-time legislature, so they're not meeting all year round. But in the summer, they start these study sessions where they start bringing up issues. They get focus groups. They start talking about what type of policies we want to move forward the upcoming session. Once they kind of identify those, a politician, usually a representative or a senator, will take up an issue and introduce that that bill. That starts in January. After that, it gets assigned to the different committees when appropriate, and it's considered by both the House and the Senate. If it passes the House, goes over the Senate, vice versa. If it passes both, then it goes to the governor, and the governor has the option to sign or veto the bill. Then, whether it is signed or not, it is filed with the secretary. And then our Constitution in the state of Indiana requires that that law or bill be circulated throughout the state, and everyone is informed via different dissemination mechanisms. So knowing that, there had been some key issues in the state of Indiana, and we as a group, we wanted to get on board with something that we knew we could have some sort of tangible outcome at the end of the year. So it is a two-semester course. And one that has been hitting Indiana very hard, which probably many other states can identify with this problem, is prescription drug abuse. Indiana has the 17th highest drug overdose mortality rate as of 2013. We also are, I think, the ninth highest prescribing state for opioids, which shows that the distribution of these painkillers is quite a problem. So the bill that we started working on was Senate Bill 406, which was getting lay responders or family members and friends access to naloxone, which many of you probably already know that it's an easy-to-use, effective drug that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. In Indiana, we're pretty conservative. So this was something that was difficult to try and convince certain legislators and politicians that it was the appropriate way to go. You also know that you probably have heard that Indiana has had a significant HIV outbreak over the last year, so which was also prescription drug abuse related. So that it was all the right time for us to move this forward. Also, there's a lot of research out there showing that increased access to naloxone and other rescue drugs is an effective way to reduce mortality rates. So we started researching the issue. All five PhD students took different sections of how we were going to research it, pulled all the information together, and we started finding the right people to present it to. So Senator Jim Merritt actually had a neighbor whose son died of an overdose that year. And so it was something that he could identify with. Same bill went to I think 2 years ago they tried to get the bill passed and it didn't get through. But now you had a champion who was really interested in this and wanted to move it forward. So we built a relationship with him, kind of felt out where he was wanting to go with this. We also have the Prescription Drug Abuse and Prevention Task Force, which is a highly active group of people looking at these types of issues, and that comes out of the Attorney General's office. So we worked very closely with them, too. They had a lot of resources already. They have a website called bitterpill.in.gov, and that, you know, gets information out there, what legislation has already been done. They have several different resources to help the community combat this problem. So we started working with them, as well as Senator Merritt, and we had to identify other advocacy groups, look for co-sponsors, bipartisan support, which is going to be really key since this type of legislation in Indiana was going to be difficult to get through. And then we had to continue to provide testimony and continue to drive home why this was a really important issue and why this was something that needed to be done. So there was another group. Justin Phillips was the mother of the son who died next door to Jim Merritt, and she created a nonprofit organization, got highly involved with them as well. But through, it really took an army to get this to go through. But, I mean, we had 35 people testify in the Senate, so a lot of support. And another thing I would say, an interesting thing about the bipartisan support was that clearly it's politics. And in the, I think it was in the House, you had the Democrats kind of asking, well, are you, because it was a Republican who was leading this initiative, asking, well, if we support this, are you going to let us be a part of it? Are you going to put us as co-authors? And it was just an interesting dynamic knowing that, you know, this type of stuff gets these bills off the floor because, you know, there's just the lack of bipartisan support. So it did pass. It passed the House and the Senate. Governor Pence did sign it in April, and I think it was implemented a little bit later that year. So the next steps is we really wanted to make sure that we evaluate this. 2 years, July of 2014, Senate Bill 227 actually passed, which was a similar bill, and that provided emergency responders, police officers, firemen, the ability to administer naloxone. 406 was an add-on to that where it extended that to family, friends, and other individuals. But we want to see how that is impacting the state of Indiana. And we are seeing anecdotally right now, there's not enough data yet to fully evaluate the policy, but we're seeing that it is reducing mortality rates in Indianapolis. IMPD, the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, started a pilot program last year where they started to let their police officers carry naloxone. I think they had something like 80 or 90 reversals in just 4 or 5 months. So a lot of other police departments are then continuing to adopt that pilot program. So it takes more than just getting it passed. Now we're having to have real efforts to implement it and get programs and policies at the organizational level to adopt, you know, the use of naloxone. And then also, I was actually talking to Dr. Joan Duby, who's our medical officer of the state, and she's also faculty in the School of Public Health at Indiana University, and we're already thinking about what are we going to do next year. So the piece that this is really missing is additional criminal protection for those who are either calling in or actually are overdosing. And we have built that into legislation on our college campuses for alcohol and similar type offenses, but we haven't done that in this. Our judicial system, the judges still have the ability to kind of determine the sentencing, and they have the ability to be more lenient in the law, but that is kind of up to them, and so that's the next step that we really want to go with this. Really, you have to look at what could we do differently, what really worked, and build on that. And what I was describing about the judges have the authority to kind of determine the sentencing, that's something that we want to do differently, but we have to figure out how we're going to really incorporate that into this next session. And since it's already the fall, we should be far along in this process, which I know the Prescription Drug Abuse and Prevention Task Force already is. So I think that's all I have at the moment, but I will take questions at the end.